I'm doing Polycast because it just happens to be Polycast Live Day.
Okay.
It's at 12:30, and we're looking to get people to come and talk and react to stuff. And if you just happen to wander past, maybe?
I will try. I can't guarantee. It's an exciting day. I'm glad you guys are having fun. I'm going to run around and do a little bit of work.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I grab Brandon? Not to talk about
you. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Just say hi.
Morning.
Okay. Thanks. Woo! Pete has said it is okay to make Phyrexians talk on Polycast.
That's good.
That is good, yeah.
Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jim.
With guest co-hosts.
Darkest Onion. Galgus.
Welcome to episode 239. Featuring Dan Q.
Tigered Parapataya. I will explain what that means later because you're probably all really confused right now.
Makalua.
Also brought to you by Cake today.
The Mian Team.
I am your 1% odds of victory.
Darkest Onion.
Pumpkin Spice Latte.
Oh god, he's part of the cult.
He's a new convert. He'll get some of his senses back later, we assure you.
Uh-huh.
And Galgus.
As we're recording this episode, we are less than a week away until Civilization Beyond Earth's Rising Tide is released. So by the time this can be listened to, it'll be the day after. And perhaps by the day after, you will have been able to have downloaded it successfully and are actually starting to play it. So
I wish they were allowing preloads. That would make things simpler for a lot of people. But alas.
Yeah, yeah, and actually that could be tied to a pre-order. It's like, pre-order this and get to play it 24 hours before anybody else.
Yeah.
That might be an incentive. So certainly on the next episode of Polycast, we're going to be talking about our initial experiences of gameplay with Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, because it would have been more than a week. Because GameSpot, according to the panels from Phyrexicon, give us a chance to look at them and we'll be able to talk about them. So just remember when we're recording this, listeners.
Our timing may not be what we would want it to be.
Boo! Fourth faction reveal! Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. Are you scared yet?
No.
I can only build naval units. Now I'm
just afraid of the rebalance. That's all.
That's the scary part.
Well, that's a legitimate fear.
Really, the reveal on Civilization.com, still having scripting errors with that 2K. Anyway, what you see on Civilization.com actually doesn't tell you anything about the gameplay at all. It's just the background, it's just the lore, which is interesting, but I would rather read that second and read about the in-game effects first. It was revealed otherwise. You start with a free spy with Han Zhemun of the Chengsu, and you also receive science per level for every successful covert operation. There's 10, 15, and 30, and we know that with diplomatic capital, you can spend more diplomatic capital to improve your traits, and every faction has a base trait that you cannot change. And so theirs is a certain amount of beakers per level for every successful operation. So you start with a free spy. You do not need to get to computing in order to get the building that then gives you three spies. So I guess when you get to computing, you then get three spies on top of the one spy you have. And now you have four, but you start with a spy at the beginning. So go find people. As if you didn't have a reason already, go find people, start spying, start stealing stuff and things.
This seems like a great nation to be friends with.
Two things come to mind immediately. I play a lot of ARK when I play BE, and it makes ARK seem kind of silly. If I could start that early, then I'd want to pick this new faction. And secondly, the way their lore is set up, they seem extremely good at the whole espionage thing in general. So I wonder if ARK is going to get a reduction in order to make them fit at the top of the spy game.
Kind of seem to be different niches somewhat. They seem like the one faction you won't want to find, though, because they'll start spying immediately, probably. Hard to tell how the AI will handle that, though.
It'll probably, if you meet it first, I bet it'll spy on you immediately. But whatever. As long as it doesn't flip your cap at all instantly.
You can't fight against it. You can't put a spy until you get the spy agency.
Yeah.
So
that might mean you have to go for computing as soon as you see them.
Counter strategies.
Or just kill them and destroy them.
Yeah, that always works.
I think that stops spies if you don't have any cities left.
One more excuse for an early rush.
If you ever needed any. That's the only way to play the game, right? You just build units and take stuff out right away.
Most efficient.
That's debatable, but fun all the same.
Speaking of efficiencies and fun, I think that takes us actually into the next topic, because there's some new information about the fourth new faction that is revealed in the next set of videos.
Where did Hybrid come from? Because, you know, bad jokes about how mommy barbs and daddy barbs, you know.
Mackie, they're called aliens and they're not barbs. How very earthist of you.
Earthist? Is that actually a thing?
Speciesist.
There we go. That's the appropriate word. See, Dan, you said...
Fine, that's very Terran of you.
I think using, like, overtly terrible word choices has a certain effect as well, though.
In the comments, they were asking, why are there no hybrid affinity designs in leaders? That's a good question. It would be nice to... Especially if you go massively hybrid, why do your cities not look like they're a blend?
First video, and they're not really very long. They're 3 or 4 minutes, respectively. Yeah. First person you see is Will Miller, and the second person is David McDonough, both co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, who were also the co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth. How do you introduce hybrid affinities into Rising Tide while staying true to the original's ideals? To which Will said, give players a way to track their progression as they adapted to life on a new and hostile world. Augment, quote-unquote, prime direction with another. So, I'm thinking, okay, so in Rising Tide, yes, there's a recognition that too much of one thing is not necessarily a good thing. So therefore, you need to supplement, and they're going to complement each other, and they're going to give you something that you wouldn't be able to get if you combined other affinities, or if you just went straight through one purity or another, or the other, seeing as how there's three.
Well, a thought I had is with the hybrid affinities, I worry a little bit there might be some muddling, not so much a straight strategy for picking the hybrid, like it'll dilute your focus on whatever you're trying to achieve victory condition-wise.
Hmm.
Still fun. I mean, I'm going to use them anyway because new. I'll try them out. If you're going full purity, for example, and just rolling your tanks over people, why would you want to go purity harmony?
I just think that's a side effect of kind of the affinity level of bonuses at work. I think most people will probably try to get at least some levels and everything.
Yeah, if we still have it where some of the lower levels and the other affinities give you some bonuses, people want to at least pick up a level or two, even if they're not really fully leveraging the whole hybrid thing.
Yeah, that makes sense, but if you dabble and you go hybrid, I wonder what will happen if you're picking back and forth and you're using the hybrids.
He ended up with, like, a little bit of all three or something?
Yeah.
Well, we've seen, actually, to jump to the second video to that point, some screen grabs, as it were. At one point, it shows us supremacy. If you're pure supremacy, I guess, is your dominant affinity at level 2, 5, 8, and 12, and it shows us the benefits for those. And then it shows us in a subsequent screen, if you're purity harmony at 2, 5, 8, 10, what you're going to be able to take advantage of. So I guess the question is, maybe at some point, if you're supremacy level 2, and then you switch over to, then say, let's say you're supremacy harmony, I guess that then means that the benefit you get for having level 2 has changed, because now you have a hybrid affinity. But in terms of how they balance that, like how many do you need in order to say that you have a dominant one and then a secondary one? Because if you've got three, what if you've got like 10, 10, and 10 levels or something like that? Then how does the game count that?
Yeah, like if you were level in 2, but you were higher on a third one, which of the other two does it pick?
Yeah, exactly.
I would guess it would grandfather your first one, but yeah, that's just a guess. The first one that you took to the higher level.
Or it could be that anytime one goes to a higher level, the numerical value of the turn rolls over, that becomes your primary of some way.
Yeah, but even then it has to pick a secondary out of the other two. And that's either going to be just like ordering in the code, or it's going to go like whichever one went there first.
Just for me, I think it's going to come down more to art and units. I know that sounds bad, but a lot of the video talks very closely about that and not so closely about mechanics and how they're balanced.
Yeah, there's definitely reference to both units and buildings being different depending upon which affinity hybrid or just, quite honestly, straight affinity that you decide to go through. That will change, that will evolve over time. I hear that word evolve a lot from the Civ Burt designers. Second question in the first video, where did the idea of hybrid affinities come from? No, it didn't start with, well, one night after we got drunk. No, that wasn't the answer.
No, that's where little hybrids come from.
There you go.
David McDonough actually says that the answer is represent ideological futures that are evocative and strange, that the three that were in Civilization Beyond Earth were the most obvious, whereas hybrid suggests three others. But then the last question, back to Will, what new system or feature do you think has the greatest potential for player narrative? And the answer to that is diplomacy, where you can, quote, craft your own player personality over the course of the game, and the AIs are doing the same thing, unquote. Always good to know that the AI is on the same page, that they are aware of the new mechanics and are doing smart things with it. That's always very, very encouraging. And you also make agreements that sculpt the diplomatic landscape as you play. We saw some of that in passing in some of the videos, that the top center of the screen after certain actions, the AI talks to you. I don't know what it has to do with exactly. Maybe the war and fear. A lot of the times they show negative diplomatic messages, and you see a couple of double down arrows or something. So maybe that's like, oh, that's really bad what you just did. Actually, just jumping ahead in another video, you construct a new outpost, and an AI tells you, sometimes it is better to grow the cities you have rather than found new ones. This is one of those times, I think. I mean, yes, it's functional in giving you a message, but there's personality in that text as well, which is so engrossing, and what so very much happened with Beyond Earth when it was first announced and it came out, comparison to Alpha Centauri and the different factions and the immersion in the story and feeling like there's a distinct character rather than it just being AI number one and AI number two, you know, having a color palette. And then there was also your combat kill, a hollow victory. This defeat will not be the end of our resistance. That you're getting, like, live in the turn. It's not like you're waiting for the turn rollover, even. Like, it happens right at that moment when you take that action. Wow. Okay. So I guess my question is, I can type that in response, right? I can send that? Can I do that?
There should be, like, a trash talk button, and you can customize what you put there. But it has, like, the same effect if it's in the same category, right? So, you know, you can do, like, different kinds of trash talk to cause different reactions from the AI. That'd be great.
Oh.
That button, by the way, should be called Yo Mama.
Well, there should be a couple. There should be like Yo Mama, You Got Served, Get Wrecked, all the, you know, lots of choices that'll do similar things. For variety.
Of course, yes, for variety. Second video, the Chengsu. I like the description of this. A mysterious and elite organization that arose from the rubble of the Great Mistake, determined to lead humanity towards a bright new future. Although its formation and reach of power is a mystery to all, they vow they have humanity's best interests in mind.
We promise.
From the other government's practice, really. I mean.
So, in other words, humanity's best interests, humanity equals us. Obviously.
Projection.
The biggest statement ever.
I trust them equally to most of the other Beyond Earth leaders. It's the same deal in practice. I mean, those guys are a little bit more obvious, but whatever.
The comment about, although its formation and reach of power is a mystery to all, is that kind of a way to say we're not going to explain the backstory of what countries or regions of the world come from? Are you really going that route?
I suspect that Moon is one of those leaders that they don't really want to take the, well, say, politically correct risk to describe the region he might come from. They're trying to dodge it, in my opinion, a little bit. Maybe right.
Korea.
So. Yeah.
Korea. Based on the leader appearance. Yes.
He's accurate.
And the name.
But I guarantee you they're going to call it Space That in the forums.
Yes. They're not already.
We also found out in the second video there was an agreement that came up on screen just in passing because it talks about you can make agreements that can sculpt the diplomatic landscape as you play, they said in the first video. And then in the second video, there was one agreement that you can make with an AI that, for example, would give you greater city defense strength per occupied trade route called Black Markets. If you had an allied relationship with the Civ as opposed to cooperative, that percentage would be higher. I guess they could see, very good agreements improve your diplomatic standing. Very good diplomatic standing improves the quality of your agreements and probably your ability to enter into agreements favorable in the first place.
Well, it intrigues me. They say you can steal diplomatic capital. So I see this, like, stealing things going, we're above board, we're so diplomatic, we promise we didn't steal this from you kind of thing. It'd be kind of fun role-playing kind of mindset for me.
Yeah, and I would hope that we think about, like, Civilization V, and stealing a technology where, you know, if you get caught, that's going to be a diplomatic problem. It's kind of like, we're not telling you not to steal necessarily, just don't get caught. How very Spartan.
Yeah.
But
explain.
I guess it's kind of like, if you get caught, especially trying to steal diplomatic capital, to me that should be one of the most egregious offenses you can do in the game, you know, short of all at war.
More warmonger penalties, that's what we need.
Yes, need.
You looked at my borders funny, plus 10 warmongering.
Still feel like the old games had the better idea of how to handle warmongering penalties. Like Warlords 2 did it right. If you're just getting stronger than everyone else, everyone just turns on you regardless.
I kind of like that.
They're just like, screw you. You know, you're about to win. We're going to at least try.
It was always epic even if you lost. You felt like, well, the ship's going down. Fight back.
Yeah. Yeah, it made the ending of the game interesting for sure.
Speaking of the ending of the game, just to everyone on the panel, myself included, when we play... or maybe more accurately put, when we played Civilization Beyond Earth, what victory condition did we tend to want to go for? Let's start with our guests. Galgus, what victory condition did you like to go for?
Well, just kind of a promised land victory all the time, Beyond Earth. I don't actually warmonger as much as I say I do sometimes.
Oh, okay, because I was about to say, if you say time, you can leave now.
No. No, never time, never time.
Dargus, have you?
I started out with First Contact because I was expecting a complex story. Then I got that splash screen, and now it's domination only. So, and I just didn't seem to have a reason to go as far as it takes to go to those awesome endings like Promised Land and go, oh, thanks for the screen. Click, next game.
Phil, that one where everyone's a smoldering pile of ash, that one.
Including yourself?
Well, sometimes the nukes are a little inaccurate, Dan. Or orbital satellite bombs or whatever.
Nuke-ish.
Yeah, just stuff that blows up, and then I win.
And what about you, Mackie?
Yes, I went for First Contact that the first time, too. That's the only bit, and then that was it. And I was like, huh. Then I decided I wanted to get the achievements for the other things, so I did those at least once. But then it's been domination and whatever flavor of resources I got next to the capital.
Of course, for me, domination as well. And I was actually hoping for mostly domination answers because it helped segue into the point I was building up to. About supremacy, what we saw on the screen. Supremacy... okay, it talks about the benefits you're getting at Supremacy 8, just pure Supremacy 8 in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, minus 25% unit maintenance. But if you go Purity Harmony and you get to level 10, you get plus 25% production towards military units. And before that, at Tier 5, minus 25% unhealth from the number of cities.
Hmm.
I like that kind of, oh... I want to have supremacy in the mix, pure or either with harmony or supremacy if I want to go domination. Whereas when I saw this at Purity Harmony, I'm like, wait a minute, based on my experience with Beyond Earth, that's not my first thought. So I like this where it's not just going to be, okay, you want to go this route, then go this affinity or that affinity. It's not even going to be an absolute choice or one or the other. There's going to be multiple choices, multiple sides to the potential story of your faction in Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide.
Ooh. Well, as long as it's balanced so that it allows...
balance. Yeah, because, like, take, for example, Supremacy. If I can go wide and get a unit production bonus, I can fill that gate up real quick at the end of the game.
Explain, what is Fraxcon?
What is Fraxcon? Fraxcon is a meeting of Fraxmithless fans, guys here to talk about Civ and XCOM and Beyond Earth Rising Tide, so we got all sorts of cool stuff today.
I'll be doing Polycast at 12:30.
Okay, cool.
And if you aren't busy, just swing past.
12:30, I will be getting ready for my talk, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you can
one,
walk
so.
Over and say hi.
If they'll let me out of that room.
Yeah. This is Sean.
Hi!
It is all his fault.
It is.
It is. It is literally all Sean's fault.
Yep.
Anything that goes wrong, him.
I had one job.
One job! Yes, this is him. This is the famous Sean on Reddit. It's all his fault. Mm-hmm.
Because you're here at 12:30.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of really close to the panel. I'm doing Polycast Live here because our Polycast Live recording time just happens to fall on. See, it is his fault. See? Say it's his fault and he shows up. So, anyways, I'm doing Polycast Live from here. Mm-hmm. I just kind of set up a little thing somewhere. And it'd be really cool. I already talked to Pete. If you just drop by, say hi.
Sure.
We're now going to go to the floor of Phyrexicon 2015, Majin.
We are live.
Hello.
Look at me.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, we can sort of hear you. No, get back here.
I'm going to go. Sorry.
Okay, that was Sarah. She came from QA, and she has had 3 Red Bulls today so far.
Yeah.
Already? Wow. Oh, my God.
That's another one.
Don't they recommend to stop this morning, too?
It will be a fun drive.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have Anton of the Stringer.
Hello, I am Anton of the Stringer.
Hello, Anton.
I am a Civ designer, worked on Civ 5, I worked on Civ Beyond Earth. I also helped out on Rising Tide as well, so I've been at Firaxis for a little over 4 years now, and I'm kind of in a Sid Meier model, a designer and a programmer. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, so how about the con?
The con's really great. Yeah, I've been playing board games all morning. I haven't been in any of the panels yet. I'm stationed in the board game area for now, which has been awesome. In the afternoon, I'm about to go be a guest star on Will and Dave's Beyond Earth Rising Tide panel, which will be fun, and then probably the rest of the day, I'll be playing board games and talking to fans.
Yeah. Did I have to explain to any Phyrexians what Polycast is? Oddly, only a couple of the newbies, at most. I think every Phyrexian knows about Polycast in one form or another.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Anton does have to run because he's got his panel.
And I have to eat lunch at some point before that.
Yep.
I got a few more minutes if you guys have any questions.
Yeah. Okay, do you guys have any questions? Anton, what are you working on now? No, don't answer that question.
I'm not at liberty to say.
We know. Stiff.
Get back here. Okay, Sarah has butterflied her way back here.
She has wings.
Okay, Sarah, say hi.
You're supposed to have that many wings.
So this is a podcast.
So Sarah is also a Phyrexian.
Yes.
She came from QA.
Yes.
And say hi. What do you like about the con?
Hey,
this is con number 2.
All of it. Yeah, I went to PhyrexCon last year and it was super
that
fun.
Well, yeah.
But just getting to meet the fans is really cool, and because everyone's just so nice and they're all excited to be here, and I love that energy. Makes me excited to go to work. So
definitely, we got a few people dressed up as well.
Yeah.
I saw several come in. Saw several centrals from XCOM and saw an XCOM
at least 4.
And I saw a guy that I don't know quite what his costume was, but he had a crown. And an AK-47?
He was the winner of last year's XCOM tournament.
I think so. He came in swag. He came in style.
Yeah.
To brag a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. He was one of the first ones I saw here. Because, the volunteers got here around 8. Sarah and I carpooled here with some other folks. And people started checking in around 9. But there were a couple people that came in early. I was impressed.
Yeah. Early morning on a Saturday. But it's all for good stuff. I mean, all the energy is keeping me awake.
And the Red Bulls.
That helps.
Yeah. Cool. I guess we're going to grab some people randomly. Ed Beach will be by. He just disappeared and came back or something. He's going to be around. Dennis Shirk said he'd be here, but I think he's hiding trying to eat food.
He's also on the Will and Dave panel. So
he's also on the panel?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have
a couple guest stars.
Oh, there's Will.
There is Will.
Somebody grab him and make him say hi, because he said he would.
Sure, go for it. Okay.
I was going to say, I don't know if I'd pick the XCOM soldier uniform, considering their typical fate, but teach their own.
So far, he is still alive.
That's a good
thing. But he was wearing 2B armor, so I don't like his chances.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, we have a hurricane, he'll probably be okay, but if there's an alien invasion...
Yeah, he's going to be the first one hit. Something's just going to appear right behind him and fall over.
The other people were civilians. I mean, at worst, we'll become chrysalid cocoons.
Woohoo!
So,
We also... just to link in some of the other people who are standing around, we have Mr. Canis Elvinus.
Hi.
Hey,
Canis.
Hey,
Canis. Canis!
Who did manage
did you
to play
movie?
Bird?
Yes, I did. Thank you for that. Here I am.
Okay. Will here.
We dragged Will in, so we'll slice him in since he has to run.
Hey, Will. Yep. How's everybody doing?
Everything's going very well on my side. Do you guys have any questions for Will that you built? Pre-built?
Yeah, I do. Hey, Will.
Yeah.
Dan Q here, in case you didn't recognize my voice.
Hey, Dan.
So I've been watching some of the Rising Tide videos, and you mentioned in one of them that there's going to be a patch to follow, because you talked about trade units having a land version and a sea version, and that's going to be consolidated. So do you want to give us a rundown of the rest of the patch notes right now for Polycast exclusives? That'd be great.
we're distracted at the moment.
Yeah,
Sid Meier just showed up.
Polycast Live.
Hello.
So Sid Meier's randomly just walked up, said hi.
Yeah, I was just in the neighborhood. Online ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing Polycast Live because it happens to be recording at the same time as Praxicon. So
it's fortunate.
It is very fortunate. Yeah, so what do you think? Praxicon version 2?
So far it's awesome. So far it's just awesome.
And Sid is yet another guest star on our panel.
Right. Sid will guest star.
He has his own panel.
Yeah, right. Because he's a baller.
Great. Well, I'll
okay, thanks, Sid. See you, Sid. All right, so to answer your question, yes, we have a patch, and it is coming. There are actually going to be several. The games are live, right? When we release them, we watch how people play. We read Reddit. We listen to Twitter. We read all the forums and react accordingly. So about the trade unit thing, this is kind of funny. Barry Caudill, our director of gameplay development, this is his white whale. Like, why is there a difference between a land trade unit and a sea trade unit when we can settle on the sea now, right? So we're just going to get rid of that in a patch and just have one trade unit that's amphibious, like everything else in the game right now. And that's coming. I can't tell you when, but lots of other sort of tuning and some, you know, I wouldn't say features, but additions, I guess. Pretty significant back patch to the base game as well, with a lot of the refinements to the UI and balance changes and all that stuff. As much as we could put into that, we did, and that's for free for all of our base game users.
Excellent. And we had a question in the Polycast chat from The Buzzing. It's like they planned for Praxicon to overlap deliberately of the recording of a Polycast episode. Come on, Will, just admit it.
Yes, our entire scheduling revolves around you guys. Yeah.
Thank God. Finally, I can sleep at night.
Right.
Good.
Anyway, I've got to go set up my panel. Mention. Thanks
thank
a lot.
Yeah,
appreciate it. I've got to head out as well.
Thanks
so much for
thank you, Anton.
Thank you, everyone.
And just because those guys are leaving doesn't matter, because guess who else is walking up to say hi?
Hello, Polycast. Ed Beach is here. Enjoying Praxicon, stopping by for a few minutes.
Ed, do you still listen to Polycast as frequently as you did when the last time you were on the show?
I won't say quite as frequently, but I'd say every month or so, I go ahead and grab an episode and download it and make sure I keep up to date with you guys.
Is it okay if I paraphrase you later as you binge on Polycast every month?
Sure, why not?
Sweet. Quote on website in the next few minutes.
Oh, God, Dan.
Never mind recording. We got to quote this glitch.
Hey, yeah, maybe even, you know, an episode title could come out of it or something. We'll see.
We actually did have a random Sid appear while we were talking to Will. Sid just randomly wandered up, said hi.
It was awesome.
Yeah, Sid was on Polycast on episode 15 in 2008. I guess we didn't traumatize him sufficiently to never come back on the show, so this is good news.
He might not have realized it was us. See, that's the thing.
Is there a theme for this episode? Was a particular plan?
Dan plans?
The theme for this episode was all the best plans, dot, dot, dot.
What plans? You think we planned these? What?
Okay. My mistake.
No, this is a Q&A. Okay. At Praxicon, people are being allowed to play 100 turns of Bert. But it looks like people are have generally positive reviews after playing 100 turns of Bert, which is nice.
I want to go check out the Rising Tide panel, and then Dennis and I are doing a Civ 5 retrospect panel. So thanks. See you guys again soon.
Thanks, Ed. All right, so we have Warning You Two here.
Steve!
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Rising Tide, and enjoyed it. It's much cleaner play. I would actually buy that expansion. Play it for about an hour, and it was fun.
Definitely.
Other than that, I've seen a lot of strange people walking around.
Like mad?
Yeah. Like mad. And we still don't know what it is. He took off here to talk to somebody. Oh, he's talking to Sarah. She's actually sitting down, so that's unusual. Ona was over there, too.
Oh, yes. Donald23, yep.
Yep.
You've already played your 100 turns of Civilization Rising Tide Beyond Earth. You should go back, change your shirt, pretend to be your twin, and then play another 100 turns.
I don't think that's going to work.
I don't want to spend the whole day in this one room, so. Oh, it looks like things wrap somebody else, so you can talk to somebody more interesting.
People. I'm people.
Yes, people, it is true.
Say hi to who you are.
Hi, I'm Stefan. I work at Praxis, the QA department.
Rising Tide?
Yes.
I've been working at Rising Tide.
Do you have more Praxis people?
What do you think about the con? So far, great. A lot of people, a lot of fun. Yeah. So we're going to be panels to con?
No, I'm working.
Well, actually, they make you work.
Oh, yeah.
It's a convention. I mean, like, what's the outreach? Because, you know, trying to pry people to us at the moment is a little hard.
Yeah.
What do you heard from people? General sentiments.
General sentiments, they liked it. They're really excited about the new game.
Hey, what the people? Cat's Life. Have you played Burt?
I have not yet played that.
So, how are you enjoying the convention?
It's pretty interesting about yourself.
Oh, damn. Advertising standards are low. Podcast is a podcast about
stuff.
About things and stuff. Stuff and things. It's too sensitive.
To be fair, the first time Will Miller was on Polycast, we had to explain what it was as well. Admittedly, it wasn't live over the internet, but still.
True. Beyond Earth, you can be very non-confrontational and still win. Civilization, you're guaranteed to meet some sort of war. With Beyond Earth, you can have shared territory, never fly to beat up on that in many cases.
That is true. Or you have to kill everybody. One of the two.
All righty then. So thanks for popping in. It's a weird lunchtime thing where people think that they actually need food before they do stuff. So people are running and hiding. Also, yes, we're about to hit the Birch panel, which means everybody's trying to get in there. Oh, one bit of note. Bert is now official. It is the title of the team in the opening address, which I guess you'll eventually see. The CEO of Firaxis used the term Bert to talk about the game as well as the development team.
Win!
Victory
achieved.
And a noun. So there you go. Some Firaxis related news at Firaxicon.
Missionary was successful. Conversion done.
I want someone to ask, what is the acronym ERNIE going to stand for the second expansion pack for Beyond Earth?
Exactly.
Actually, I had that discussion with Ed Beach right after Bert became a noun. We were sitting together, and he was like, how are we going to get ERNIE in there? The idea is already going.
Yes.
Yes.
That would be awesome. Pull that off. Yep.
All right, so I'm going to paraphrase that on the Polycast website. Ed Beach confirms ERNIE. No kidding.
We don't know it yet, but it will be there. So I think that's going to do it for us live from Firaxicon, because I think my phone, which I need for the connection to you, is about to die.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Plus, everybody's running away.
Who was that last person you were talking to?
Some random dude, because I didn't quite see his name tag.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he was one of the people who were attending. It's all good.
Well, thank you, Mad. See you on the next episode.
Okay. Talk to you guys later.
So that was Mad Jin and crew reporting live from Firaxicon 2015 in Baltimore, Maryland.
Talked a lot about unit art assets and redesigned art style and all that kind of stuff.
Well, one of the things that you were telling me before the live stream started was that in creating Beyond Earth, you guys were doing a lot of work just getting the units into the game. And so with Rising Tide, you guys have had a chance to punch up some of the artwork around other things.
Concept art is sort of utilitarian in the beginning of a product. Like, we make lots and lots of pictures of units and environments and all this stuff, but most of it never makes it into the game because it's just sent off down our pipeline. But it was important to us that in addition to adding more fictional hooks into the game or opportunities for the fantasy to show through in the mechanics, in the quests and all that, we wanted to put as much art in the game as we could. It's an opportunity that we were able to take in the expansion because we weren't so busy just trying to figure out what the aesthetic was going to be in the first place.
Right.
So we had more bandwidth to do that kind of thing.
Made me think that Vanilla BE, as much as I love it still, had a very bland, kind of washed out kind of feel to the art style. And seeing the new art assets in that video shows me that it might stand out a lot more visually.
I kind of compare it to how we eat food. Yes, we eat with our taste buds, and yes, of course, we smell the food, but we see it. And sometimes that's all we see if it's a photo or it's a video because we can't smell it, we can't taste it. So if it's eye-catching and it gets people to pay attention, then you can hook them in with the rest. So I think a lot of the time when we talk about games, particularly strategy games, where our first consideration is not artwork and ties into an upcoming topic perhaps in a way, perhaps we don't give art the appreciation that it deserves unless we're complaining about its failings.
Right.
So I think it's important to give it props as well, because there's definitely a concerted effort here to give it kind of a visual appeal and hopefully be enough to at least give people a chance to try. That very first video, Pete Murray, Firax, marketing manager, and he's talking to Will Miller, again, co-lead designer on Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. Pete is playing as Duncan Hughes, North Sea Alliance, one of the new factions that Bert is bringing about, and it's one of the two factions that can start in the water, potentially. Anyway, I love this. He declares on Arisha of Alpha Law to attack their undefended colonists in the water. And, of course, her response is, war is not the answer. There is always a better way. Yeah, there is a better way. Protect your frickin' unit.
Or don't forward settle me.
Yeah, both of those are great ideas.
Alpha is already ruling out their next colonist, so I think we're gonna have to declare war here in just a moment.
Take him out.
Yeah, I think it's gonna have to come to that. So
yeah,
I hate doing this, but yeah. Yes, we had to sink the colonist in order to save it. Right, right.
War doesn't go well for Pete.
Let's give it a couple more turns, and then I'll take my shame and humiliation back elsewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Everybody's shooting at me. They're defending themselves somehow. I really wanted that. Oops. Let's take a look at the war score. So tell me how bad. Wow, really?
You are...
It's because I keep losing units. All right, well. Boss is something I'm becoming increasingly familiar with. I wish I was...
Look at this situation over here. You got like three Krakens.
Yeah, and I just saw a colonist sneak out of the back of Ard as well, which annoys me. Yep. I managed that badly.
This could have gone better for you.
I experience regret. Tell you what, I will go and I will think about what I have done wrong. And by that, I mean reload this game and try to play it again later in my own time and figure it out.
But we've seen in previous videos that Pete is not a warmonger. I think he was peer pressured into that by Will to declare. Or just for the lulz, maybe. It was pretty lulzy. It was good for a live stream. That was the best part of the live stream. Yeah, the conversation about the art was interesting, but for me, it was the entertainment value. I really wasn't going in expecting new information necessarily, because some of the YouTube comments reflected that. What a waste of time this was. Nate Bogner didn't really see the point of this live stream. Just like a waste of people's time. Well, I guess it depends your expectations going into the video. And at some point, you've given us lots of information. How does that actually play out? Because I can put lots of information on a piece of paper for you, and you academically have an idea of what this is going to look like, but until you experience it or see it in action, that's all really is an academic exercise. So I think that was actually good use for the live stream. Just don't market it as perhaps we're going to, not that they did, but just market it as we're going to actually play the game, not just talk about playing the game. We're going to play the game.
Well, I like that Pete kept a positive mindset during the losing combat. I mean, that's not easy sometimes, I know. I'm enjoying losing. How are you all doing that?
Question from the chat. How did you select the new sponsors? A lot of thinking goes into selecting any leader for Civ.
Right.
One of the best talks at Braxicon last year was Ed talking about selecting Civ 5 leaders.
Yeah.
It was really cool. All of the thought that goes into that. And it was different for us because we had to select leaders that fit the fiction. And our Fraxicon talk was about the backstory of Beyond Earth and the Great Mistake and what happens geopolitically in the wake of that. And
right.
It's funny, if you like listen to that talk, it kind of telegraphs a little bit what we were thinking for the expansion.
It did a little bit.
It
did a little bit.
Some of it has to do with just what we were interested in at the time and what we thought would be cool. Who was representing the game already and who we wanted to represent, what would make a neat story. So just kind of went from there, I guess.
From the second video, one of the other questions was from Juarez. Can we expect any changes to the victory conditions? And I think that's been touched on before, but it was confirmed here. Yes, you can. The new hybrid affinities don't come along with their own victory types, but they do change the way in which you can pursue the pure affinity types. And on top of that, the whole catalog of victory conditions have been rebalanced and readjusted to take hybrid affinities into account, says Dave. Don't come along with their own victory types, but says they do change the way in which you can pursue. So, victory conditions, you can still maybe attempt to do what you always did, which I guess is good in a way, that it's not, okay, you just can't go this way at all anymore, but maybe it's not the best way. Maybe that's what they're trying to say, that since it's been rebalanced and readjusted, it's kind of, well, you could still go the vanilla Beyond Earth route, but it's going to take you a little longer, It's going to be a little more frustrating, greater degree of, you know, potential for margin of error.
My worry is, like, say you go purity supremacy. Let's take that one for an example, right? Do you build the gate to convert Earth, or do you bring people through? Do you choose that, you know, in a rebalance? Or does it get chosen for you based on, you know, your levels of affinity?
I don't know. Like, purity harmony, for example. Is purity harmony, like, is purity harmony and harmony purity, are they the same thing? Are they intended to be interchangeable? Or, in fact, does purity, does that mean that it is the definitive affinity?
Like, you're going to be bringing the colonists through if you're the first one.
Yeah, so maybe that's how it determines which one. I don't know. It's a good question.
If you could do both, that'd be really weird.
I guess I could give you some kind of flexibility as well. I mean, how many times have we said, oh, now I got to try to shift gears because this victory condition is not going to be possible because of XYZ game circumstance. Okay, I'm going to have to go a different route. Okay, I need to reload the save from 50 turns ago. Ugh. In order to make it even feasible, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's, oh, well, it doesn't matter what happens in the game, I can just switch easily. I'm not asking for that either. Let's just avoid the extremes that we've seen in some recent and not-so-recent Civ titles. I like K980's question. Will spy operations be changed any in Rising Tide? Have you met the Chengsu? That's a pretty big change. But yeah, it's the mention of the dealing of diplomatic capital, which is the new resource in the diplomacy system. But then Will Miller says, we've also rebalanced it a bit based on player feedback so that it's more multiplayer friendly and a better system all around. And so it's like, oh, well, there wasn't a lot of reason in Vanilla Beyond Earth to use diplomacy in single player. And in multiplayer, well, like, diplomacy is just
talking to other people, right?
Yeah. A lot of that is abstracted, right? It's not tied to game mechanics, the conversation. Like, you might actually be chatting in-game, but that has no direct in-game effects.
Well, with spying rebalancing what they're talking about, one thing I think they need to address, and that's just in my opinion, mind you, is that now going over a level 4 espionage seems to be extremely mathematically difficult. I have not had a single city flip since, I think, the last big patch. And I play Ark a lot, so I'm trying actively, you know, to get that done. And it always seems to fail around 3 or 4 over and over again. I don't know what they changed.
Yeah, you want it to be an interesting choice. Okay, the higher the level that it requires, yes, the bigger risk, the bigger the reward. Whereas you could have something at a lower level, and even though you could perform a higher level action, you're more guaranteed to have success on a lower level. It's kind of like investing, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I can invest in guaranteed investment certificates. I'm going to get a return. It's pretty well guaranteed, but it's pretty mild as compared to, no, I'm just going to invest in all stock and, you know, make or break.
I mean, have you folks had trouble flipping anything?
I don't use the spies hugely, but it does seem like the lower operations are just so good sometimes that you may not feel the need to go for the high ones all the time.
That's the funniest one, when your capital flips, you aren't paying attention.
Oh.
And it feels really painful when it happens.
Yeah, it's
your home.
Crippling.
I guess really what I would like to see, and I'm glad Fraxians have talked about this, if I'm a target on the map, and by that I mean I'm leading in something, say science output, for example, then I should have to have one or more agents in one or more of my cities to counter that. It shouldn't just be, for example, like I said, 5, oh, let's just construct a great firewall, and I don't have to okay, yeah, you got to invest in the great firewall. But at the same time, I often didn't feel a need to have any counter agents at all. I just go and I steal, and even the AI figures out that I'm stealing from them, and they don't change. I don't get any notifications that suddenly I'm being spied on consistently. So I just like to see that in Beyond Earth, that it's kind of that balancer that the AI is also playing the game, but they're also targeting who they're going after based on both your circumstance in the game and your actions. And maybe we're going to see that with the new system, because we see that already with the diplomacy system. Like, you settle a colony, they think it's crap, they tell you right away it's crap, and they don't just tell you to tell you. You've also now apparently lost some respect.
Well, I want to say more back to AI. Like, if they forward settle me, I want a direct button that says, hey, that's my territory, stop that, and have the numbers crunch with the AI to decide how they feel about what I just said based on the new diplomacy systems.
And not this, I forward settle you, and now I'm mad at you because our borders are closed.
Exactly.
Yes.
I didn't cause that.
We've got a question about trade convoy versus trade vessel. There are two separate units for trade in the game right now. There's the trade convoy, which is a land-based trading unit, and the trade vessel, which is sea-based. This is one of those situations where the game that's going to ship on disk has these two units in it. But in a patch we're going to release pretty soon afterwards, we're going to consolidate those two into a single trade unit. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for your trade units to, you know, have a land version and a sea version when you can build units right at the beginning of the game that don't have that restriction. So we figure if you've mastered the seas, you can
figure out how to make an impact. If you can fly across the galaxy, you can make an impact.
It's kind of annoying to have to research something just to know how to do it. Sea-based trade.
Another fun one is, like, you build a single wonder in a game. I tend to avoid building wonders largely. And the AI hates you for building a wonder they coveted. You built a single one the whole game, and that's the one they're mad about.
I wouldn't mind that so much if they could also be happy with what wonders you construct. Hey, that's pretty nice. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I just think they weight certain things like that too much. The way the AI treats it is too high relative to its comparative impact on gameplay position. They get pissy over a wonder like it's the Great Lighthouse in Civ 4 on, like, an archipelago or something. Like, okay, you want to kill that guy who built that and take it for yourself. You absolutely want that. But ever since then, there's been no equivalent wonder to how broken that was for good reason. And with some of these wonders, the AI still reacts that way. It's like,
how dare
man?
You build the gardens? It's like, oh, no, I mean, gardens, you're evil. I'm like, no.
Yeah, it's not Great Lighthouse, man. Relax. It's not going to win the game for you by itself.
And don't give us the Beyond Earth equivalent of the Civ 5. I covet lands that you currently own.
Yeah.
I'm in the bleeping plains and tundra. Why?
It just wants to conquer you. That's what that modifier should just say. Like, they want to attack you.
That's what it means. They're going to come after you. I've never seen a game where, like, nah, never mind.
Neighboring civilization, and thus you are a target. Let's just say that.
Moving on, there was an interview with Taylor Fisher, an artist involved in Beyond Earth. I was fascinated that 90% of the art the team puts together just doesn't simply make it into a project. And so for me, the first thought was, I wonder what that all was. You know, just out of curiosity. But also, I was glad to see that he encouraged modders to run with their own style and imagination when designing their own units and stuff like that, instead of trying to get to the art style in BE and make it fit.
I like that. This kind of encouraging some creativity among them. Though, Beyond Earth has a great art style of the same.
Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, of course.
I guess a lot of it is the concept art where they're still trying to flesh out exactly how they want these things to look, and maybe they get half of it right, but then they have to go back and change things repeatedly. So they go through a lot of iterations, because if you think about it, when they do the coding, that's the same problem. First time might be not so great, and then they have to go through it over and over again.
I can see that. Sounds like something they could put out as an art book. Hint, hint, noises. I wouldn't mind seeing some concept art.
Or a graphic novel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
She also says in the same question, which was, since the release of Civ 5, the community has uncovered several pieces of art which were completed but never made it into the final game, including wonder splashes and icons. How much art hit the cutting room floor? And, of course, I read that and I thought, sounds like audio or video editing, to be honest.
I like to imagine one employee sitting down doing wonder movies going, they might just do it. I think we could get those back in the game, somehow, somewhere.
Yeah, some ideas get saved and reused later. And they employ the company, so the company owns it, even though it's your design, so they own it, so they can choose to release it or never release it or what have you. But I gotta believe it, sometimes that's frustrating. But seeing as how it's already paid for, like we said, put it in some other form, even if it's not going to go into the game, because people will be interested in that. And you market that well, it will make money.
Well, yeah, take any one of the wonders and just do a promo video before give an expansion. This is the so-and-so flower. It is awesome. Yeah. See? Buy our game. That simple.
Yeah. There were 10 questions in all, and this was an interview on Civilization Fanatic Center. And as someone posted in the comments, it was nice to see an interview from an artist, because actually, when I think about any game, for example, and I read an interview, it's like, so you're the designer, you're the producer, you're the community manager. Oh, so you're the designer. You're the producer. You know? It just kind of seems to go through. They don't talk to anybody else. How about talking to, hope they get like an audio engineer or a coder next?
Or somebody that works on narrative. But I have friends that work in the art development for video games, and they're pretty happy too just to hear about any article that mentions anybody in the art department other than just the person in charge of all the art, the business end person.
Yeah, the actual artist.
Yeah.
I think the last time we talked about artists in relation to Civ, and it was specifically Civ 5, when there was a claim from people on the CFC forums, and it got a lot of views and a lot of pages about, hey, This is not original art. Firaxis found this art on the internet and put it into the game.
Oh, if I remember that.
How can they do that and make money from that? They stole it. So it's nice. So I'm like, really?
They use buildings.
I forgot about that.
You can't use buildings. Someone used that word and they picture that building. There can't be no Parthenon in this game. That's what freaks me out.
And it made me think of one of the other questions where Sarah said, Civ fans tend to be history buffs, so they're aware there's a lot of written reference in historical texts and ancient art. He also talks about I use a college professor as a reference since he has a background in ancient cultures. I also love visiting museums, so if I have to go look up something specific at a museum or exhibit, I'll be happy to do that too. Inspiration comes from everywhere. Yay.
Yeah, I like that bit. It felt very personal. I felt like we're getting inside the mind of Fisher, and that's always fun for me with creative people.
She was also an intern at Firaxis during the development of Civilization V, because there was a question about, Art Deco Civ V, more unique style for Beyond Earth. How are these art styles decided on? She said, with Beyond Earth being the next chapter in Civilization, the team wanted to differentiate the UI styles but make it somewhat familiar. The style they chose is a blend of a variety of sci-fi themes. I think that was a good idea not to go with the same art style because it was already, oh, Beyond Earth, you know, just a Civ V mod.
There was a lot of that, I remember.
I like the UI, just generally. Clean look to it, I think.
I would say it was obviously same engine, but I had the argument with CFC a lot. Same engine does not mean barely changed. It means same base code.
Exactly. Now, Taylor, she has been with Firaxis since March 2012. It's like you've been with Firaxis more than 3 years, and I had absolutely no idea. And part of that, I will say as an aside, the Firaxis website used to list every single member of their team with a photo, name, title, background. That doesn't exist anymore, hasn't for several years, which I find disappointing. But I guess if you want to try to find people who are working at a particular game company, or if you're wondering if they're working at a game company, type their name, put them in quotation marks, and then looked on LinkedIn.
Might be easier, yeah.
Found out that she was also from February 2009 to February 2010 at Firaxis. That was the time she was an intern. But she also worked as a concept artist at Big Huge Games from February to May 2010 and then from February to May 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, wow. Small world. It's a small world.
No.
Speaking of artists, I'd like to see some of them on Firaxis streams. You know, Pete Murray, awesome, and a lot of people we see on the streams. Let's have an art person on, talking about the art.
The people are the heroes, not the heroes, those who have come.
This is discussing EU4, I think.
Yeah, episode 238.
Joe had a little rant.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, I was nudged into doing this, though, to be fair.
It's true. I asked Phil to respond to the comparisons with respect to Europa Universalis 4, seeing as how I have never played the game. I know Phil has, and that was the part of the comment from Literists that we wanted to focus on the content specifically. So maybe Phil can condense for us the conversation, especially for those of us that have not played the game or just vaguely aware of it.
Okay. Lay it on us,
well, Phil. Let's not get too far into that. I think the big thing is how it relates to Civ 5, so I'll focus on that, because I mean, he was suggesting the coalition system being a replacement of some degree for the warmongering menace thing, right? Or at least I guess that's the gist of the concept, I guess.
The mechanic he's talking about, right?
Yeah, AE and coalitions versus warmongering menace to the world, and they do share some similar traits, but they're pretty different. To put it bluntly, the coalition system in EU4 has changed like 5 or 6 times or more, probably, if you go over the patch notes. And there's some unannounced changes to it as well, because it doesn't work. Its present form is probably the closest to a working model we have, and it still doesn't work. The one thing that could be taken from it that would help Civ 5 a little bit is over time it's become less opaque. In other words, you get to see how the AI is reacting to your actions more now than you did at game release. So, like, if you take a bunch of lands, you will see how much aggressive expansion, and it'll also tell you, okay, these guys are probably going to band together and attack you if they think they are strong enough to do it. And it'll give you a list of the nations. That's not something you see in Civ 5, and maybe that could help, you know, or just that vision of, okay, I'm going to do this, and it will piss the AI off by this much. Because unless you go into the game code or you follow the forums really carefully, it's true that in Civ 5, you really don't know exactly how much warmonger you're going to get for one action versus another. And sometimes the relative penalties aren't intuitive. Like, someone attacks you, and in retaliation, you take out their two cities, and suddenly you're just freaking evil. And that's right. Kind of nonsensical, especially if Alexander over there has, like, 15, 20 cities, and you have 5 cities, because you conquered this other guy's 2 cities, and you're the warmongering menace to the world with a quarter of his cities. Well, okay, but that's not intuitive. And knowing the sources of the mechanic and just the rules of the game in this regard would be useful, certainly. So it could take that from EU4, but otherwise it would not be good to replace a mechanic that can be improved with one that is proven over time to be not functioning all that well.
Well, I remember how opaque it was. I played over 1,000 hours of Civ 5 before I ran across Beyond the Monument. Yeah. I'm like, oh, forward settling's bad? I thought that was just taking territory. So I had to train myself to pay attention to the mechanic behind it. So I pay a lot of attention now how that's changed, if they rebalance things or whatever, or change the new system.
Yeah, I don't like minding it, so I just kill stuff in our games.
Well, you can do that too. Like, it's gone.
Yeah, there's no warmongering menace to the world penalty if there's no other civilizations, so we'll just go with that.
And if you can set it up where you don't need the luxury trades, like if you're not even using them as like part of your mechanic to win, you can go, people don't like me, want to trade weird? That's funny.
Yeah.
Just roll over them.
I mean, you can mind it a little bit, so you can still make a couple trades.
Yeah, you got to keep a functioning economy and happiness and all that.
A little clarity always helps with the diplomacy. Yeah, AI strongs always seem to make much sense, as you said.
It helps in general. It's really frustrating to me in any strategy game, and if you have a game rule that's opaque, it's a freaking rule. Let us see it.
Yeah. Well, I've had some games where I feel like before I'd learned all about the intricacies that the AI always hated me, no matter which way I played. Like, it was almost set up like, this game will be conflict. You will not get out of this unscathed.
Yeah. And it's not like there's any really in-game way of determining what actions are causing that. So, yeah, I mean, it could seem like that. And is the game really better for that, for it being a trial and error gameplay aspect just to figure out how other nations are reacting to you? And it's kind of nonsensical.
You have to ask, are you playing to learn? Are you playing to have fun? Is it a combination? If you're the type of player that likes to learn the hard way and get bashed in the face with the AI, then you'd get all excited.
But you can still do that, even if the rules are there or knowable. You can still do that. But it's just asinine. You're supposed to be formulating a strategy, and the rules of the game that you're operating are being hidden. I hate that so much, and yet it's difficult to find a strategy title that doesn't do it, other than StarCraft 2. But that's the only one that comes to mind, and that's RTS and very, very niche within the entire base of strategy.
I noticed that, too. When I first found out about that kind of phenomenon, I wondered if it was kind of a challenge to the so-called elite person in the game. Like, only the elite people will discover this mechanic, ha, ha, ha. You know what I mean? And the average player doesn't need to worry themselves with the kind of attitude.
Well, I've played enough hours in some of these games where I've been at least a decent player in them to some degree. And I think that kind of elitism just doesn't belong.
I agree. I'm saying I've noticed it. And I was kind of like, oh, really?
And I've noticed it too, but there's no place for it in a strategy title. You know, we're not playing I Want to Be the Guy. You don't need spikes to appear and screw somebody and kill them for no reason. Like that.
Exactly.
That's not this genre.
Plus, it pushes people out that are new. They're like, I didn't know that rule. Thanks for using it on me repeatedly.
Yeah. Rather than dumbing down the game, maybe a little bit less trial and error gameplay would bring in the newbies. Yes?
I'd be behind that. Especially in EU4, which I just bought. So.
Yeah. You know, the sad thing is they have been trending towards providing more information, and that's a good trend. It was so bad at the start that it's still bad despite them adding a lot more UI clarity. There's still a lot of things that aren't.
Yeah, this is my second try to get into it, so this time hopefully I'll begin to understand the systems a bit quicker.
Also in feedback, episode 236, Feedback Redux.
Oh yeah, we have more.
Yeah, more feedback and more feedback. Tovaroko, he got his illusions about Madrin dashed because, what's he talking about immersion?
Well, that was said earlier, right? Yeah.
It's like we play games to feel like we're in a virtual world of some kind, and a strategy one at that.
Yeah, Megabosman also had a couple of points about removing cinematics and about being a board game.
Yeah.
Yeah, his most recent comment being the Redux, since there hadn't been any comments for several weeks.
Yeah.
But he was responding to something that Ryaka had said. A Mega Bears fan said, powerful civs, by virtue of being powerful, also tend to have the strongest economy. And since trade route value is determined, at least in part, by relative economic strength of the cities that are trading, it frequently behooves a weaker civ to trade with a larger one. and then add research gain to that. These are good rubber band mechanics since they grant more value to the weaker civ in the trade, but it still encourages everyone to open trade with that one economically leading civ.
I don't know. I see his argument, but for me, I build a huge economy for any civ. Like, that's one of my first important things if I'm playing a long game. I hit random at the beginning of every game I play, even single player. It's gotten to a point where I realize the system for money, there's beneficial people like Venice, you can play a good game with them because they're special, obviously. But I don't know, I guess I've automated the money-making system for myself in the game.
I guess when I think of economy, being someone who tends to go warmonger, I think of, okay, so what is my economy when I'm in wartime and when I'm in peacetime?
Mm-hmm.
Of which there, of course, we can also think of that in this thing called real life as well.
Yeah. If you're conquering, you're getting these bonuses every city you take, basically.
Yeah, and at one point when it's then, okay, I'm not going to be taking any cities anymore, and that's kind of the basis for my economy, I actually think less of Civilization V and even more Civilization IV in the sense of, okay, I'm running this massive deficit of my economy, but that's okay because I keep taking cities and I get this influx, so the fact that I'm hemorrhaging money is okay because I keep getting piles and piles and piles.
Right.
But then at some point, can I now switch to a peacetime economy? Am I going to be able to maintain where I am, or am I going to stall myself? Have I taken too much too quickly, and now I'm vulnerable because I can't keep my citizens happy and productive enough that they start to crumble, and then that makes me a target for other civs who realize, gee, you have a lot of territory, and you were powerful 50 turns ago, but now I've leapfrogged you in terms of technology. You may have lots of units, and I don't have as many, but they're superior, so now I'm going to start squishing you, and I should have been planning better for that. Either that, or I don't worry about going to a peacetime economy because I'm going to have my wartime economy until I win.
Let's right. be honest. In Civ 4, if you managed to not bankrupt, you could usually survive.
Well, that's
because
true.
Of collateral initiative.
Well, I mean, you're talking about economies and stuff, and I think of the privateer units. If C is an option on your map, level that up a few times and hit a city for the last smack, and you'll have all the money you could ever dream of. But I thought recently somebody should mod in a pirate unit, a land unit that does that. Really low attack. But if you hit a city with it, money explodes into your pocket. That can
I don't know. Like, I think the money war incentive is there already if you tune for it. To me, the problem in Civ 5 is just you're so penalized for owning additional cities beyond the first few until the late game, which is frustrating. But Beyond Earth doesn't have that particular restriction, so it snowballs a little.
Yeah, but I also think of this feedback actually in terms of our multiplayer games, our cooperative games, where I'm in a situation where at times I've taken out my AI, and some other people might say, oh, Dan, do you really want to continue playing? Do you want to wait? Like, are you not bored? And as long as I feel that there's some kind of forward momentum with the people that I'm playing with, that they're going to be able to take up their AI, it becomes, okay, now my goal is to manage my economy.
Right.
Can I make my cities productive? Can I, in fact, continue to progress? And so, yes, it's kind of like my own victory condition,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, it's also, am I able to manage things internally? Because, quite frankly, let's be honest, it's one thing to capture territory, and it's another thing to hold on to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you stand the test.
We all know
time,
that
basically.
Dan really just plays for score then.
Yeah, he wonder whores and population yeah. whores. And
can I manage my economy to build these wonders?
Listen.
Dan's on the defensive.
In Civ 5, it's not about the wonders. It's territory that I've acquired, and it's like, this isn't going to be the best city, but I don't need it to be the best city so much because I'm not warmongering anymore. I need pop. I just need land so I can increase my score. People tend to see that. They're like, Dan, you've been settling a lot of cities these last 20, 30 turns. Is there a reason? Nope.
Yeah. Well, like, when we play multiplayer together, I have to remind myself not to conquer what I can't hold financially. Because then I have to go into this huge disaster fund relief kind of activity while the other people are taking out their AIs. And I get lucky starts is what puts me into the place to conquer early.
Like, it's more a happiness issue. Like, the money can cause you problems, but if you plan for it, that's a barrier you can consistently overcome in early game conquest.
Yeah.
But the happiness is just dependent on the availability of luxury resources in your own territory and in the territories of which you're conquering, and whether you have any viable trades after that. Sometimes even the human players just don't have multiple copies of the resource. And then you're kind of stuck if you do the early conquest. And the other thing is, in our multiplayer games, is that the player who conquers early is frequently not going to have a score advantage because they're not going to get the easy, fast religion founds that are really good religions. Tradition is probably not the best rush opener. but it's really great for growing your capital huge and picking up a ton of wonders and teching quickly, which are all very conducive to high scores in the end, as long as you can get that one AI kill still. So, I don't know. Well, I decided really to not bother with it and just kill stuff and call it a day. But
well, I try really hard to kind of pick actions on the map. If I have another player, like, there's an AI between him and I, right? And I think it's going to be his AI, but he hasn't said. I try to stymie that AI, contain them by settling different and playing a bit different, even to the point of losing score. Because if when I don't check the AI when we're playing multiplayer together, sometimes I think it runs over certain players, and I don't want them to have a bad day.
Yeah, that's fair. I usually just position myself strategically so I can fight the AI if it borders me, no matter what it is. And then if it comes to that, I do it. But if it doesn't, I don't. I only commit citadels to AIs I'm actually attacking.
I see what you're saying. Sorry if we digressed a bit there off the top.
No, that's all right. It's all related to economy, or as properly said, economy.
Mm-hmm.
We did get a little bit away from the whole construct of rubber banding versus runaway and how that is represented in 4X. That's a major theme.
Well, I was hinting runaway.
Back. Yeah. But how do you handle that, really? I think the game just needs to end sooner when you have a runaway. I think that's the best balance you can get. Because if you make it too rubber banding, it really does make your choices throughout the game pretty irrelevant until near the end, and that's not good. You want strategy to matter. You want your choices to matter throughout the game. So if you're just going to get rubber banded every time you screw up, that trivializes a wide range of choices throughout the game. Hmm. That's not good design. You don't need blue shells in Civ.
In Civ, yeah. I had a problem with the Russia in one of our last multiplayer games. And the problem is I attacked them. I did fine. I took out half their cities. It's wonderful. Couldn't push further. So I stopped. And when I looked after I stopped, they had founded 8 cities behind that.
Oh, on the Mediterranean map the other day. Oh, my God.
And I was
God,
like, oh, and I felt bad. Because I'm like, I knew somebody was over on the other side. It was him, Songhai, and another player. And I'm like, I'm just going to tell you, I can't take out Russia. It's not going to happen. I don't have the time tonight to grind them down.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt bad because I didn't contain them. If the other player had taken the sky out, they would feel like, well, what happened over there? Were you not watching Dark? Were you not playing as well as you're supposed to? And then he'd be right. I should have been more containy.
Nah, I mean, there's only so much you can do. I wouldn't worry about that too much. And players can spec to just mass conquer cities later if they want to finish the game. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, and particularly on that map, the area that she was resettling in was such a crap area to go settle in.
Yeah. I had to do amphibious landings to get into the Empire every time I came at her.
Yeah.
I mean, Grim Mackey and I had a fun time after one of the players quit just conquering that one runaway AI.
Yeah.
And just we beat that crap down like nothing. But it took a few extra turns.
I think it helps in Civilization V when it comes to domination, which, of course, is the primary purpose going after AI in the Turncast games, going after them cooperatively, that in order to win, when you're talking about single-player domination, take all the original AI capitals, and you win.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so if you're in that situation in multiplayer, you can say, look, fine, that's their last remaining city, or one of their last remaining cities, it's their capital or whatever, but it's not their original capital. You have the original capital? Good. Then someone can say, oh, that's just like an in-house rule. You have to go and completely wipe them out. But, yeah, bad on you for maybe not seeing it, but it's kind of maybe you did see it, maybe you didn't see it, but the purpose was to take out them substantially, that the fact that they have one city left, are they really a problem on the map?
Yeah, break their back. Yeah.
Are they really playing the game anymore, or are they just, this might be a bit dark, are they just wheezing?
Yeah.
They're not coming back from that. That's a fatal blow. So we're not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a lot of times in MP games we say once we take out their capital, we're done with them, basically. Because usually when you do that, you are ripping a huge amount of their production and gold and everything out.
Yeah.
Well, I
Although I usually kill them off anyway.
The second paragraph from Mega Bears Fan, I'm going to go off on this a little bit here, but it made me think of something else that I do in our games in terms of how I approach managing economy. Mega Bears Fan says, perhaps going back to having a cap on the number of trade routes that can go in or out of a particular city could help determine wealth around a little bit more. Maybe each city could start with a cap of 2 incoming trade routes. Build like markets, harbors, airports, and stock exchanges, or custom house buildings could increase the limit. Civ 4 had a mechanic like that in which every city had a limit to the number of trade routes, so everyone couldn't funnel money into the same city. Of course, Civ 4 also didn't give the player any control over where your trade routes went, and it didn't have a city space to trade with, so ... And it made me think of, in the early game, when I'm like wartime economy, and I'm really pushing the units, and I'm working to stay in positive gold, mostly so I don't get the science hit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to fall back on that, but I'm fielding a lot of units, so I need money in order to pay for that. I'm focusing on sending trade routes first and foremost probably to city-states that I can reasonably protect, or if I'm near a fellow human, then I will send it to the fellow human and protect it because I'm also going to get some science out of that. But then by the time that I have, quote-unquote, my civ, as in what I started with plus the AI that I've conquered, I now start looking at those trade routes and I start thinking more about the power of having internal trade routes because I don't need those external trade routes in order to stay positive gold anymore. I've got those buildings established. I've gone down, say, the commerce tree. I have gotten myself the ideology. All of that is now supporting my economy. I don't need as large an army as I did before. Doesn't necessarily mean that I'm disbanding units,
yeah.
But I'm not building anymore. Cities are also connected by roads and or harbors, depending upon the layout of the map. So now I think, okay, I can now rely on internal trade routes to manage my economy because the cities are going to get larger. They have the buildings in there for those modifiers to then start getting more and more gold, more and more science. And so having a limit on the number of trade routes so you can't funnel, you know, money into the same city, I don't know about that. Well, it seems to be kind of, you're forcing that.
I would just like to point out, the four trade route mechanic did not allow for food or hammers, and that's a big difference because it was just straight commerce, which could be applied to research or gold. The other thing is it had no micromanagement whatsoever. In a game that is more micro-intensive than Civ 5 by a margin, this is one of the few examples where Civ 5 has more micro by a margin. Civ 4 would just calculate your best trade route. It would literally do that for you and then just run them. But there wasn't food and hammers, and you weren't choosing between food/hammers against research or gold. For better or for worse, the design team for both Civ 5 and BERT have decided that the trade route choice trade-off there is a good thing to have in the game, and that trade route micro is part of the game. Limiting it on a per-city basis, I mean, I guess, and that could add an extra dynamic, but it's not going to apply a whole lot in practice, at least not in Civ 5, because there just aren't enough trade routes available in the early game regardless of what you do. And then in the later game, you can have those buildings anyway. It would be something to consider, but it wouldn't change the fundamental gameplay a lot. Now, in Civ BERT, that's different. And I guess you could do it. The only thing that makes me more cautious is having to manage the just ridiculous numbers of trade routes without a good interface for managing trade routes. It got pretty tedious pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what fascinated me, actually, I tend to connect things, because remember, Civ is a simulation of nationhood and all that kind of stuff on a certain level. And he's arguing something politically right now called cap and trade. Literally, it's exactly what it is. And so I couldn't help but see kind of, so we should be limited what trading we can do. And I saw almost like, maybe that's how they came up with the idea, Mega Bears fan, you know, going off real-world economics and all that. And I guess maybe I'm weird, but I always try to reference what I'm doing in the virtual Civ game. Like, how does that kind of play out in an abstract way in real life?
So abstracted in the game, though. Like,
it's hard.
Real-world comparisons are almost futile. Because you could just say that that's also much value as is feasible to trade to the city at this point in time, given its infrastructure, without any political element at all. And, I mean, that would be plausible in the context of Civ, because the trade routes are abstracted to that extent.
But I don't like the idea of limited trade, because trade is the lifeblood of empires.
True, but let's say Mali's trading at its height. How many caravans can you realistically send to Mali before that you just get diminishing returns? Your marginal utility goes negative. And at that point, that's functionally a real-life cap that has nothing to do with political negotiations or anything. That's just a real-life cap. Sending additional goods there or trying to do additional goods there is going to give you negative value, so you stop doing it.
That's good, rather than saying, okay, no more than two.
Right.
But the game doesn't bother to model that, and I think it would be a little bit too in-depth given the game's level of abstraction as a whole. So but it's not one of those things that bothers me a great deal. You can just pretend that cap source is anything you want it to be, I guess. It needed to come down, though. Like, the game was just living on trade, basically.
Well, that's true. You were getting so many.
It was ridiculous. Like, what your cities had didn't matter as much as just your health, and could you span out more trade routes?
Well, B, I'll settle anywhere.
From nothing, independent of your pot.
Well, as much as Firaxis said, hey, don't compare the barbs to the aliens. When it comes to the trade routes, yeah, I am going to compare the barbs to the aliens.
Yeah, same function there.
Because I can get this little ultrasonic fence thing, and you know touchy.
Reverse polarity.
The number of times I've seen an opposing faction plunder a trade route, next to none. It's the alien threat, and then you eliminate that, and then it's, woo, no problem. Whereas, oh my gosh, even Civilization V could be, you know, turn 125, and it's, how come the barbarians just plundered the trade route? Oh, there's a camp on that one hex island in the middle of nowhere. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Now, what kills me in Civ 5 with trade route plundering is if somebody's at war with somebody you're trading with, they've established a trading route to you, and then somebody plunders one of their trade routes coming to you, and your number goes down. I'm like, do I declare war on them? Because they just cost me X number of gold per turn, and they keep doing it.
And the best thing is, if you do that, you get a warmonger penalty for it, even if they fell a yeah. trade route. Like, come on. And
they need that's to cross a belly system. That's what they need. Just like a, no, this is why. And then each AI can go, oh, how do I feel about that excuse?
Oh, man, there's not enough cities or empires in the game to have to rely on SCB system. I didn't want to see that in, like, Civ 5. I don't think it would work very well. I mean, you could do it to have it impact the amount of warmonger hate you get or something, but at the end of the day, I don't think it would do enough to merit inclusion.
I don't know.
I cite Conquest as my CV, lol.
If it was a single-player game, for example, and it's like, hey, I'm going to go declare war on Civ X, and Civ Y is trading with them, and Civ X sent the trade route to Civ Y, you've now pillaged it, not because, of course, it's the trade route of the Civ that you're not at war with, but because they were trading. And then I could see Civ Y saying, hey, I realize it's not, strictly speaking, one of my trade routes from me to them, but it was from them to me, and that's kind of not cool. So do you want to be in a war with both of us now?
Well, you could also do something kind of indirect. You could find their major trade partner, somebody that has a trade-dependent economy, and embargo not your enemy, but your enemy's best trade partner to slow them down. But I wonder if it would be just more efficient just to embargo them, period.
I guess it depends what those units impose, you know, the embargo practically, I take it you're getting at. What could those units be doing otherwise? Are you going to be farther off by them doing that as opposed to engaging in some other activity? And I can think of there's situations where yes, it would be.
Well, I mean, I assume what they would do is they'd probably go ahead and assign their trade routes other places. And then you have to look at the whole situation and you have to predict where the AI will morph its trade routes. And that might be more of a problem than just going, no, not you.
There's nothing like being the most hated person on the planet. And it's frustrating when, you know, you get the warmonger penalties and it's like, but they declared on me. You shouldn't be taking their cities, Gur and Arg. And then they're like, hey, World Congress, so no more trading with city-states.
Well, one that I would want is if someone forward settles me into a horrible situation, they don't get anything out of it, they come onto my continent, an archipelago, for example. I should get no penalty for removing that stain from that situation because they're not going to benefit from it, and they just did it for the whole, well, there was a spot to settle, mechanically speaking. And leaving that city there just seems really strange to me because it gives them a beachhead to launch land assaults in my territory.
You say beachhead, I say embassy.
Yeah. It's an embassy. What's with all those artillery?
Embassy, quote unquote.
They're embassy. Yeah. Bombers.
It's an embassy.
But you know, I haven't been Citadel bombed by the AI in a while. I do remember it, though, not fondly.
And then tonight during Tencast.
Exactly, it will happen. I'll be like, yep.
Dun, 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 dun.
Civilization Wedding Ceremony, posted on Facebook and YouTube. Not sure exactly what to say about it other than that it's kind of fun. Everyone's kind of in a costume for it somewhat. Kind of a cheesy but cute thing, I think.
You know, it's not explicitly said, but just based on body language, I've got the feeling that this was the groom's idea. More than the bride's.
You know, I thought that at first too, but I watched some of the photos of certain parts. And I started to get this feeling like they both played. I don't know how I got that feeling. It was something in the way of the body posture of the woman getting married, right? She seemed like, as the pictures went on, get more involved in let's be happy marriage, you know?
And she was happy because she was focusing in her mind on the actual marriage part, not on the theme.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm a big nerd. So for me, I found the
wedding. No, you're on a Civ podcast and you're a nerd?
Wow. I found it to be extremely moving in a certain way. See, my fiance and I intend to have a gamer wedding. And I'm sure there's certain people in our families who are going to roll their eyes the moment they hear that. So we're going to have Baba Yetu maybe in the background somewhere, some subtle stuff so non-gamers won't go, what's that song? We're not going to dress up like Halo and stuff like that because, well, that, to me, that just makes people go, okay, what's going on here?
No, I'm in a Master Chief. You're a Master Chief.
Master Chief and Sonic are getting married. What is going on here? Kind of.
That's what you picked as the other one? Really?
No, that's just as a random thought. I hadn't thought of it. I've seen a lot of cosplay weddings.
Sorry, confirmed.
I could see that you hadn't thought about this, yes.
Well, I was going more on the Microsoft-Sega thing. I was in the console wars, a veteran. So,
did Sega have a console and Microsoft was relevant in consoles?
Depends what you call relevant.
The music choice was great. You had the original Civ music and the reading of the intro text. You had Baba Yetu, already mentioned, for the arrival of like the wedding party and the bride and the groom. And then you had this Civilization Online music closing theme after the vows and the still photographs.
Stonehead is casting shadows, indicating that our star is in the right position for their constellation, their union, to be completed.
According to the shadows cast by the stones, it's time to unite two people.
It is hard to find a worthy companion in this world. I'd like to make a public declaration of love, forming the other empires as the bond between our peoples. What did you say?
Yes, let us work together.
When I said I got this inclination, other than the stereotypical fact that, well, of course the guy thought of this,
mm-hmm.
when I'm talking about the body language, when they're doing their vows, and one of the people officiating puts the microphone in front of the bride,
mm-hmm.
she laughs, says nothing, the microphone goes away, microphone goes back in front of her mouth, hesitates again, and then she says to her groom,
your lands will make a fine addition to my own.
Yeah, exactly. That made me laugh.
I was like,
that's what told me she might be a Civ player too.
From an alliance. Because
that'd be a thing you probably wouldn't just ask your bride to say. You know what I mean? There was too much cheek in it. She must have written that.
No, I took it as it was written for her, and she said, yeah, I'm going to say it, that's fine, but then when it actually came time to do it, it's like this internal struggle in her mind. Am I really going to say this?
Right.
Am I really going to say this? But at least she had a smile on her face because it was, okay, this is what we agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go ahead and say it. It's getting kind of awkward. But some of the other dialogue was also enjoyable as well.
Oh, yeah. And I was thinking diplomatic marriage from Maria and all that kind of thing could have been there. But they sounded like they were Civ 4 fans. Particularly, that's what I got out of what I saw, 3 and 4.
Well, I mean, I think they've been Civ fans for a while, and or they did their research on Civ titles. But, yeah, it was well done. Now, and I hope this is a matter of when, not if, and planning my wedding, I would love it if my bride was also into gaming. But I'm not certain I would do this necessarily, but I thought it was a good balance between what the event was actually for.
Right.
The focus is the wedding, and the dialogue and the purpose, it was an appropriate reflection of the game. It wasn't too minimal that you couldn't really detect it, but it also wasn't heavy-handed just to have a gaming reference to have a gaming reference.
Right. Well, would you, for example, get married at a gaming convention, like adjacent to it somewhere at the same time as a big event?
Yeah, he's asking, are you going to plan your wedding around Firaxicon?
Yeah, that's the thought I had. I was like, that'd be kind of odd.
Oh, I mean, you know, if Firaxicon is going to plan around podcast episode recording.
There you go. I'm just trying to picture, like, one person, bride or groom is XCOM kind of styling. Somebody else like Civ or, you know, some of the other things that they have. It'd be kind of funny to watch an alien marry a world leader. I think of that kind of mashup stuff sometimes.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Well, I had a game with America, their capital. I didn't know it was there in Archipelago. I had founded a city literally four tiles from their capital. The game's like, oh, here's America. I'm like, oh, no. I was on Immortal trying to play a nice, peaceful game.
You should get negative diplomacy. You fail at scouting. Oh.
Well, I had no boats. I couldn't see them. They were across this little channel. So.
But then they could also say, you don't explore the area, but you settle? Wouldn't you like to know what's around you before you set up shop?
Yeah, hey, I can understand the coveting my land thing if I'm sitting there with the capital on the map equivalent of the Nile with all the desert floodplains and I've got desert folklore. Of course you want my shiny capital. But when we get those ones that are in the plains, you want this piece of shit, have it.
Well, they wanted a desert city with no resources. I settled it for like 2 iron. I'm like,
God.
Okay, come get it. I'm not going to defend it.
Wait, you're not going to defend it? But it sounds like you needed that iron.
No, I found 6 in a corner. It was my initial iron source. So you know how you always want to have a little bit just in case on an archipelago because you wouldn't mind frigates?
Well, yeah, when it comes to the game, I mean, construct them and just forget about it.
Yup.
Never used that before.
Not repeatedly either.
This is said at the beginning. I was going to explain my introduction of Tigard, Heripataya. Tigard is a city in Washington, Oregon, in the United States. And on October 1st, apparently the Polycast and a company were hosting 30 students from Tigard High School. And I don't know who they were really trying to send it to, but it's Tigard's at the Polycast. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, Polycast is Tigard's? So I responded the same day, and I said, if you think the city of Tigard would like to sponsor the show...
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's no response yet, but there's still hope. And then the Peripataya was actually the day of the word on dictionary.com for October the 2nd, and it was a sudden turn of events, or an unexpected reversal, especially in a literary work. A sudden turn of events was receiving this tweet...
Nice.
Notification. The word of the day for October 3rd on Phyraxicon is melee. And the term for October 1st was espial, the act of spying.
Like, coincidence? I think not.
Spying, turn of events, melee. I sense a very nice theme developing here.
Yep. I wish I could have gone to Phyraxicon this year. I meant to, but I forgot to. And by the time I remembered, the tickets were sold.
Oh.
Maybe next year.
Closing we go on this feature length.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we went long.
Yes.
Thanks for access for the feature length.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true.
We are all showing our stamina off.
But it's always fun to hang out with you folks. Uh-huh. So a long time's not a hard time.
Wait, are you saying we're here for a good time, not a long time?
There you go. I knew you'd check it out. Well,
speak for yourself regarding the hard time. I mean,
every time I listen, no, never mind.
Whoa.
This has been Polycast 239.
This is Darkest Onion.
With Dan Q, Makalua, me and team, and Galdus.
Well, certainly you're not getting feedback or anything like that, right?
No, I'm not getting feedback. Just...
Yeah, the Mikey itself, it's not supposed to be moving, but it seems to be flashing red once in a while. So that's probably the tucka-tucka-tucka. It's a little weird. Huh. The actual mic itself keeps doing little flashes on me for some reason.
Yeah.
It's not as stable as it should be.
I can understand what you're saying.
Okay. Hey, Steve.
Hello there.
Imagine. All right. Talk to Dan.
Hello, Dan.
Steve. Hey.
And here.
How are you?
Yeah, we can't actually hear him nearly as well as he can hear us. I'm good, thank you. I just played Bert. Actually, I like it better than the previous Beyond Earth. I enjoyed it. I got killed by a siege worm.
Aww.
Are you broadcasting to everybody right now?
Not yet, no.
We're just testing.
Private testing.
Too bad you couldn't be here, Dan.
Yeah, it is too bad I couldn't be here. I'm there in spirit.
I have to urinate. Bye. As long as you have that recorded.
I was about to say, Steve doesn't know I was recording that too, right?
Featuring Dan Q, Makalua, the Me and Team, Darkest Onion, and Galgus.
There was supposed to be a pause in there.
Ah, that's right. Speaking of efficiencies and fun, I think that takes us actually into the next topic, because there's some new information about the fourth new faction that is revealed in the next set of videos.
I was waiting.
Hyper Definities.
And we've got a battered remote medical operating theater. I dare you to use it first.
You only wonder what goes on in it.
Who knows? It's slightly battered, you know.
When you have someone on screen for the first time, if they don't say their name, you kind of should have that on the screen.
Yeah, you think.
Who are these people? That was just kind of a...
Gotta go on land sometime. I mean, you got one guy there.
I disagree.
Well, you have to hop and pop.
Well, yeah.
You gotta skirt the coast and then hop in and get what you want.
I'm gonna take military industrial complex because I'm gonna start building just lots and lots of things that shoot other things.
There we go. How about this?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's markedly better.
Yeah, we'll just flip around the other side of the column. Sarah, don't you dare run away.
Out of context, that's even better.
I only heard about it last fall, but it's actually been out since 2010. I think I've converted at least 30 or 40 of this battle sheet, and we have a whole bunch of new people that keep ordering copies every time I demo it. So.
Ed, are you getting a commission on each one of these sales?
I should be. And then...
I think what Ed is dancing around here is that in a patch for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, there actually is going to be a battleship unit added to the game, right?
It's a bad idea.
We actually do that. Certainly something the mod can take care of, right?
Probably, now that we've mentioned it.
So I think that's going to be it from us in Praxicon. We still have Kenneth with me, and Wording E2 showed up again.
Yeah, I finished peeing.
Yep.
Thanks, Steve.
And, oh, by the way, there's a flood in the guy's washroom there. Somebody took a major dump, and it's a mess. But anyway.
Oh, God.
On scene report.
Here you go. Have this on live. There you go. Just have a shovel.
No, you can't turn the aliens off. That was another question.
The aliens are kind of important. I mean,
very important.
It's
game,
really sort of a check on your early game expansion if you like stay without barbarians.
And with the leash ability, they're a huge asset later. You can build the sort of beastmaster army.
Yeah.
Braxis is open to that. Neil is open to that. So I think this should happen, and I think all of us should get a cut for contributing to making that happen when it happens.
I can imagine even Civ 6 having him as the voice intro, like they did for 4. I'd be like, okay, I purchased. As if I wasn't going to already get it. But B might be more his style.
Hey, you know what? There, he can do the voiceovers for Ernie.
There you go.
Look at that. We're just setting things up for success here.
Because I'm being happy today.
Thanks, Farrell.
I got it just now. Good one, Dan.
Well, next, you know, Dan's going to talk about getting lucky.
I like how Mackie's thinking right now.
Oh, that's fine.
Bad Dan.
You lucker dog.
Oh, wouldn't that be something if the AI sent you a bunch of nukes and destroyed all your improvements, and the AI is like, hey, negative diplomacy, your land's pretty crap. Hold on.
So that is your cue.
Oh, he's doing the outro.
You!
Oh my gosh, I didn't write it down. That's terrible.
Galgus, would you be willing to come back?
Maybe sometime. I would. Sorry. And you didn't pause for us either.
Oh my god, that's why I don't do intros. I'm horrible at that, sorry.
That's alright, we had an extra long session.
Recording October 3rd, 2015. Praxis livestream clips copyright 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.